One way we can do this is if our fluids, for example, water, is already a part of the rock that's getting buried. So we talked about the whole dehydration idea. So if you have a mineral that has water in its structure that's being buried, it's taking that water with it. This is one way to bring water into our metamorphic world. Igneous intrusions can also carry fluids with them. If we think way back to the idea of convergent plate boundaries, if you have rocks that are on the tectonic plate that is going to get shoved down underneath the other tectonic plate as two plates converge or collide, you can bring water down that way too. And so there are a couple different ways you can do this, but the idea at the end of the day is that the moment that we bring fluid into the equation, we're going to cause more changes chemically than we did with temperature or pressure. Now, I've told you that metamorphic rocks form very far underneath the surface for the most part. And now we want to think about, well, if they form all the way down under Earth's surface where we can't get to them, we can't watch them actually forming, how are we lucky enough to see them at Earth's surface? And if you recall, I said to keep in the back of your mind that we find a lot of metamorphic rocks in mountainous areas. We see metamorphic rocks at Earth's surface because the vast majority of them get exposed as part of mountains that are uplifting. And then as we erode that mountain down, we expose these rocks that used to be buried so deeply beneath the Earth's surface. So even though most of these form in a place that we will never probably be able to get to and look at, we still get a chance to see them. And we still get an idea of what's going on down beneath Earth's surface because of these rocks as they're brought up to Earth's surface during the building of mountains. Stepping aside briefly from our idea of all the different processes that create metamorphic rocks, let's take a moment to think about how we're going to classify our metamorphic rocks. And if you recall, we always use these ideas of texture and composition to classify all of our different rocks. Texture for metamorphic rocks is really easy. We don't worry about grain size. We don't worry about crystal size. All we worry about is, does it have layers or does it not? If it has layers, we call it foliated. If it doesn't, we call it non-foliated. It's that easy. So you just look for color banding, a sense of layers, anything like that, and that is a foliated metamorphic rock. Now, when we name foliated rocks, we name them based on, effectively, the amount of metamorphism that they've gone through. So if we start, for example, with a shale, so it's a mudstone formed in quiet waters. It's got nice parallel layers. You could split them apart with a knife and look for fossils. If you bury that shale just a little bit and you pack everything down with a little bit of pressure, you're going to form something called a slate. We use slate for chalkboards and flagstone. If you keep on burying that poor shale and you just keep pushing it down, you add more temperature, more pressure, you're going to step through a variety of mineral changes that occur as pressure and temperature build.